is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Wednesday, October 2nd, and this is Laughing A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today. Today we have a treat, Aaron. Today we have a treat because we have the Honorable Jim Lawler in studio. He just published one of his new books, right? The Bahamas, History and Memoir by Jim Lawler O.E., right? We're excited to have him on Saturday, October 5th at 12 p.m., 11 a.m. at Saturday, October 5th. He's going to have his book launch at the Nassau Yacht Club. And we're going to go into some details about that, about the book and everything. We're excited about this conversation. If you're not familiar with Jim Lawler, he is one of the premier historians inside the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. What is your position at the
Bahamas Historical Society?
Bahamas Historical Society again.
I'm the vice president and the correspondent secretary.
Yes,
I used to be president, but I kind of gave that up and became vice president.
All the newsletters about what's happening in history in the Bahamas I get from Jim Lawler and of the Bahamas Historical Society, you need to sign up. But before we go and start our interview with him, before we go in depth of this new book, this new venture, right? Let's have Erin continue her reference of the conspiracy theories. I'll give you about 15, 20 minutes of that. And then we go right back to Jim Lawler.
Absolutely.
And what the great things that he's doing. And get some more details about this book in general.
And this is perfect because another role that Mr. Lawler has is that he is a teacher of critical thinking.
Teacher right? of?
Critical thinking.
Oh, yeah.
And whether it's intentional or unintentional, my experience being a student of Mr. Lawler is understanding critical thinking.
And the philosophy.
And philosophy.
And Mr. Lawler taught you twice,
yes.
right? At what, UB, COB,
COB,
and at Queens College?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is going to be a treat for you, too.
Absolutely.
Good. But go ahead. So we can start off with Mr. Lawler.
I could even say that he may have been an unintended muse for today's little segment. So from earlier in the week, we were addressing a commentary made by one of the callers that said that he didn't believe that oil that we pull out of the earth, fossil fuels, were a result of the decay of forests and dinosaurs and things. He feels that he believes that the oil has its blood, right? Bang. And so I thought before we just say this, you know, we discount it as wildly foolish, right? How do we interrogate conspiracy theories and how do we determine what is and what isn't a conspiracy theory? And I'd ask the guests, is there funding available? Remember, we had guests from the Office of the Prime Minister's Climate Change Environmental Advisory Unit. Is there funding available to study, do research to validate or invalidate traditional beliefs and practices with contemporary science, right? And so that led me to this conversation about conspiracy theories. And here is a list of conspiracy theories that I gathered from the modern times. The first is Bahamian and relevant to the Bahamas, and perhaps the biggest conspiracy theory in the Bahamas right now, which is outside of the Bahamas is the home of Atlantis, not the hotel, the former civilization.
Under Bimini.
The Bahamas is the 51st state of America. Hmm. Remember, one Mr. Rodney Moncur would promulgate that the Bahamas is no longer an independent or sovereign nation. It is a U.S. protectorate or territory. And his rationale was because we haven't had an ambassador in years. Hmm. So that's the first one on the list. The Bahamas, the 51st state. Is the Bahamas still an independent nation? Conspiracy theory. Second one, of course, we're all familiar with JFK's assassination. Multiple theories. In fact, there are over 1,000 books written about the Kennedy assassination and putting forward theories, conspiracy theories, why he was killed. And these series include Killed by the CIA, by the Mafia, by the sitting Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson, Fidel Castro, even the KGB. And some people assert that it was the U.S. federal government itself that conspired to have JFK killed. Then we look at death of prominent figures, conspiracies surrounding all of them, like Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., Diana, Princess of Wales, Jimi Hendrix, Notorious B.I.G., John Paul II, Nelson Mandela. There's a conspiracy that Nelson Mandela actually died in prison, like in 1980. They call it the Mandela Effect, and that he was replaced by somebody else. Haitian President Jovenel Moise, Sahari Oaks, Bob Marley, Jeffrey Epstein, Paul McCartney even. And then we have what they call the inverted death conspiracies, where we don't believe that Elvis Presley actually died. He's somewhere in a motel down in American South, eating peanut butter jelly sandwiches and singing on a toilet. Also that Adolf Hitler survived World War II. New World Order, the Great Reset, right? Promulgated by, we believe, conspiracists believe, promulgated by groups like the World Economic Forum, Bohemian Grove, Skull and Bones. We even believe that Houston, Jay-Z are a part of this grand new world order, another prominent conspiracy. Predictive programming, Mr. Newry. Many theorists allege that the contents of fictional media in a process called predictive programming are manipulated to reference planned false flags, technological innovation, social changes, and other future events. These references are understood to be a conditioning and brainwashing tool such that the public becomes more accepting of these events than they would be otherwise. For instance, there were a couple of articles 2 years ago about pilots who indicated that they saw beings in jetpacks as they were approaching airports, right? And they told the stories and we're going to do some more investigation. And now we just see people in jetpacks all over the place, just carrying on as normal. But the TV show The Simpsons has been accused of predictive programming, where we saw the Twin Towers fall decades before, in episodes decades before they fell, and a number of world events seem to play out after being featured in the animation The Simpsons. Then we move to Freemasonry. There are, again, 1,000 conspiracies connected to Freemasonry. The Masonic practice. These conspiracies even involve the sinking of the Titanic and the crimes of Jack the Ripper, but we even have conspiracies that say that the Freemasons are protecting and holding and protecting the Covenant of the Ark from thousands of years ago. Then we have things like false flag operations and crisis actors. Then we get to some more things that are exciting. Here's a conspiracy theory that's being thrown about to the world and has something to do with the Bahamas. It is alleged that FTX funds that disappeared were funneled to the DNC and the GOP, and that Ukraine would have returned some of the aid given to it secretly back to the Biden administration. Right? These are conspiracy theories that involved the Bahamas, like the Bahamas was the home of the conspiracy, and this money that FTX lost was actually intentionally lost for the purpose of funneling back to the Biden administration. Then there is chemtrails. You ever heard about chemtrails?
Yes.
What are chemtrails?
That's the jet smokers be back of jets.
Right. So conspiracy theorists allege that there are U.S. military operations that release chemicals into the environment via the trails of the airplanes, the jets, and some of these chemicals, they allege, control behavior, control thought, controlled weather, control agriculture. Here's another big one. AI is all many technicians, I don't say scientists, but many IT people tell you AI cannot be sentient. In its very nature, it can only do what you tell it to do. But other people argue that the first thing AI would do is convince you that it's not sentient. Is AI already sentient? Another conspiracy theory. Aliens have already landed. And most of the technology that we're using today comes from things that we have reverse engineered from what we have found. Nuri, do you believe aliens have already landed?
You need to ask me if I believe in aliens.
Nuri, do you believe in aliens?
Of course I believe in aliens.
Do you think they landed?
I think our Lord is an alien.
I mean, he's extraterrestrial.
See, there you go.
But is that the same thing as alien?
All is the same to me.
Okay. Another conspiracy theory. The moon landing is fake. Do you believe the moon landing is fake?
I believe we never left this planet.
For real? You believe the moon landing is fake?
I believe we never left this planet.
Okay. Another conspiracy theory is the moon landing was real, and the reason we never went back to the moon is because we encountered aliens.
We never left this planet.
Okay, which leads us to the next one, flat earth and the firmament.
This earth is round.
What about the firmament?
It's the sky.
Why we can't leave the planet if the earth is round?
We just don't have the technology to leave the planet.
Okay, no problem. What about an inner earth? Some conspiracy theorists believe that there is an inner earth. Some people call it hollow earth. Some people call it inner earth. But that there is another earth. There are civilizations living within the planet.
No.
Okay. Time travel.
I believe that.
What's your
No, mind. You cannot take. That would mean the earth would have to reverse backwards. Which is impossible.
So you're saying that time could only go back?
There's no such thing as time. It's space revolving.
No?
Yeah.
So you're saying that the time travel couldn't be possible because there's no such thing as time?
Yes. There's no such thing as time. It's a manufactured artificial artifice by man.
There you go.
You actually go, it's the earth going round and the circling the sun and that kind of thing.
And so time, as we perceive it, is a construct of the human condition.
Yes.
I would say of imperialism. They all want all my time and don't want to pay me none of my money. But
time
I agree.
Time is not linear. It's a circular.
It's a circular thing.
Circular.
You come right back.
All right, all right. Here's another one. Not you, Mr. Nuri, because you don't care. U.S. major league sports are rigged. Baseball, basketball, football, WNBA, NHL, that all of these sports are rigged, that they are actually entertainment companies and not true sporting leagues. And our expectation that games will be played fairly is sorely, right, is too high. And we should just take it for what it is. U.S. Major League sports are just like wrestling.
I want to know why Mako swim team always winning. It got to be rigged. But go ahead.
No, I think in certain instances, they are players who throw the game or don't perform as they should. Mm.
Right.
In English soccer, there's a few instances of that.
Yeah, and we even have, there's a 60-minute special where referees who were caught up in the Allen Iverson scandal actually expose themselves and say, yeah, we cheated. In fact, we had a concerted, like, conspiracy. We did, and we said, that boy Iverson, it don't matter. Mm. He can get fouled up. He can get all the fouls. We don't care. That boy disrespected us. And be going all out. Mm. Okay, 9/11. In and of itself, people believe it was a false flag. People believe that the U.S. orchestrated it. In particular, the conspiracy theory I'm looking at today is the theory that 9/11 was orchestrated internally by American actors for the purpose of creating the environment where the U.S. federal government could get away with passing both the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Act, which changed the face of, at least for non-Americans, interacting with America through travel, going to school. Everything changed after 9/11, and in particular, the passing of the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Act.
Who knows?
I mean, maybe. Somebody knows. That's why we have it on the list. Mm-hmm. Okay. The Tuskegee Airmen, the Tuskegee Project.
Yes.
Where we found out that those in Tuskegee were being inoculated. They were being given, they were being tested on
with
syphilis virus. Yeah. And they didn't know. Simulation Earth. Many people believe that we are living in a simulation. That we are only as real as the simulation we are in.
We're in somebody's imagination?
Yeah. It could be an alien's imagination.
Matrix.
We could be in God's imagination. I mean, we could be in God's imagination if you want to think about it like that. Another conspiracy theory, why can't we live on Antarctica? Well, first reason, because Bahamas Air don't fly there.
Yeah. And then the colonizers already carved it out and said we're not allowed to go visit.
Right, but why? That's the question. Why are we not allowed to live on Antarctica? It's the only continent. I may be believing the conspiracy theorists because I haven't read it for myself. It's the only continent where vast majority of developed countries have all agreed, like, we're not going to fight over this. We're going to share it. We're just going to keep the people out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Why can't we live on Antarctica? Another big conspiracy theory, you know, CERN and the Hadron Collider?
No.
Anyway. Some scientists in Europe have a machine. They've been looking for the God cell. And conspiracy theorists allege that every time these scientists turn on this machine, that they open up like a portal to another realm and we get sucked into it.
Nonsense.
CERN and multiple dimensions. Okay, you remember Fruit of the Loom?
The underwear commercial?
The underwear. You remember the logo on the underwear?
Yeah.
The horn? They say that didn't exist. They say that's just our memory. They say that never existed. That when you remember an image of a Fruit of the Loom label with a cornucopia, the brown basket holding all the fruit, that brown basket never existed.
Okay.
You remember seeing it?
I remember seeing the grapes.
I didn't ask you about the grapes. I asked you about the basket.
I just remember seeing fruits.
I believe you remember exactly what I remember.
Mm.
Okay. Subliminal advertising.
I guess that's a science.
Conspiracy theorists believe that governments conspire with the media to essentially force messages into our brains through subliminal messaging. You ever watch TV? Like, I used to have this habit of watching TV late at night, and I always have the munchies. I'm watching TV late at night. Always wanted to get a snack, something to eat. And I figured that these people, these marketers, are like, we got them. Just push these messages on them late at night. They're going to get hungry. They won't know why. And they just going to keep eating and buying our products. I was young then. Last, I come in quickly. Then this is the last one on the list. Then I went, except for Don't Let Woman Climb Me a Fruit Tree. I went to a class where we actually saw an example, a commercial, right, of subliminal messaging where they made it look like the pasta was growing from the trees and people were out harvesting pasta and the tomato sauce was growing from the trees as well. It was a fantastic commercial, but subliminal messaging. And then the last one, don't let women climb your fruit tree. Don't let girls, females climb your fruit tree because it make it sour. That's a conspiracy theory. There is no proof to it. There's no truth to it. Y'all just don't like women and y'all will say anything in the defense of your misogyny.
Okay.
You tell me it's true. How do you know it's true?
I believe it's true. I sincerely believe
You have any proof that it's true?
I ate a number of sour gnaps.
But how you know a woman climbed a tree?
I see them climb the tree.
How you know man didn't climb the tree and make it sour?
It was sweet before the woman climbed it.
I don't believe you.
Or birds.
No. This woman climbed it and it turned sour.
See, it could have been birds, but you insist in this woman.
You ever say sour juju?
Yes.
Woman climbing.
You can't even climb a juju tree. They wiry, man. They spring. You can't even get in there.
Kermit, we're going to take a short break right now, and we'll continue with our conversation now with Jim Lawler. And, of course, that he's going to have a book release, which is going to be this Saturday, October 5th at 11. At 11 at the Nassau Yacht Club. It's going to be this Saturday. October 5th at Nassau Yacht Club at 11 o'clock. The new book that he has is The Bahamas: History and Memoir of Jim Lawler. There you go. Right? And we honored you, right, in the Bahamas?
Sorry?
We honored you, the Bahamas honored you?
National honors. I'll be giving it next week.
Good. So we'll talk about that too. This is Guardian Radio AM. We'll continue this conversation. We'll be right back.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
For fast fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Of course, we have the Honorable Jim Lawler here in studio with me. I'm excited because of what all he has contributed to the Bahamas. My listening audience who are not familiar with you, because I know you were as a teacher in the Bahamas. But how long have you been in the Bahamas and where do you hail from originally?
I arrived in the Bahamas on the 27th of December, 1968.
From 1968 to now, Mr. Lawler has been contributing to the Bahamas. He is now being honored by our government, an honor of excellence.
Order of excellence.
Order of excellence. Tell us about that.
Kindly Leslie Archer put me forward for it, and the Governor General accepted it. So next week on the 14th, I'll be going to the Bahama to receive I don't know if it's a medal or what, but from the Governor General.
And I want to congratulate you for that because, like Aaron, who had the privilege of being taught by you, we know you have contributed tremendously to the Bahamas. You just recently celebrated your birthday, September 8-ish. When was your birthday?
8th of September.
8th of September.
Same day as my wife.
Same day as your wife. And your wife has transitioned.
Sorry?
Your wife has transitioned. So you're celebrating your birthday now without her?
Yeah. She died 3.5 years ago, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I first met Anne at a McAlpine's party. What happened was I was serving my time at the bar at 9 o'clock at the Buena Vista, which is now Watlin's Brewery. It was outside the Buena Vista. And I was serving at the bar, and it got crowded. So this guy came in, and he ordered a drink. I said, Craig, could you find somebody to help me? And he brought Anne. Well, we laughed and joked and served drinks and then danced all night together. And that was the first thing. We both loved music, and we both loved dancing. When I knew, well, let me describe Anne first. She used to come to the McAlpine soccer games. And she had a long African dress, very patterned, goulimeen beads from Morocco around her neck, a brown felt hat, a suntanned face, and Jesus sandals. Mm-hmm. She drove a mini moke, and she had a dog which was half Pekingese, half Dachshund called Chunga, which she had brought from Spain. And the only way you could talk to this dog was in Spanish, so I had to learn Chunga, venga aquí, vamos a la playa, just to talk to the dog. And then the time when I found that I loved her, we had gone to Harbour Island for a long weekend on one of the holidays, and coming back on a friend's boat, and this is Anne all the time, she'd take books and everything to Harbour Island and then not do stuff. So coming back on the boat like 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, and she says, Jimmy, I was Jimmy in those days. She says, Jimmy, I've got an exam to write for tomorrow morning. She was teaching literature at St. Andrews. Luckily, she wanted me to contribute. Luckily, it was a literature exam. I had studied the poems of Wordsworth. I had studied Macbeth for my GCSEs in England. And I had read the Dickens book. So together we contributed. And that kind of struck a deeper chord that we were on the same wavelength, both like on a social level and on an intellectual level.
Evenly yoked.
Eh?
Evenly yoked, they call it.
Yeah, evenly, and born on the same day, mm-hmm. 10 years apart.
I just want to say, you didn't know that you loved her when you decided you needed to learn Spanish to be able to talk to the dog?
No, the Spanish came a little bit after I knew her.
Mr. Lawyer, you married into a history-type family.
Oh, boy.
Your wife, Anne Lawler, father was Paul Aubrey.
Paul Aubrey, Dr. Edwin Paul Aubrey, dentist
anyone
and
who
historian.
Did history, anyone who did social studies is familiar with the name Paul Aubrey, because all the books published in history is in Paul Aubrey name, between Paul Aubrey and Gail Sanders, right? So we know who Paul Aubrey is, right? And you, along with your wife, and now your daughter, Miss...
Dr. Lisa Lawler Feller.
Yes, Lisa Lawler Feller. I'm now basically have, throughout the years, have partnered in creating history books, recording Bohemian history.
We
and
have.
This is one, what, the one we're talking about today, which you published. And you have a number of history books that you, it's in the pipeline. This book, The Bahamas, History and Memoir by Jim Lawler, right? How important is recording Bohemian history? Why has your entire life to make sure record the history of the Bahamas?
Well, Paul Aubrey had a sort of an itch for history from his early days. Like, Bahamian history wasn't taught in schools until like the late 1950s. It was the advent of the Bahamas Historical Society, which Paul Aubrey was a founder member, in October 1959. The Bahamas Historical Society was formed. And he just, like, loved history, loved... He was a... When he was in McGill University studying, he was a distinguished student in literature. And he could write, and he had that way, and he could talk it. And his enthusiasm just passed off to you. Like, when I came back from England after studying my philosophy and religion in England at the age of 40, he sent me to the archives to research and write a religion chapter for the Harbour Island story that he wished to start. I got to say, when I was a boy reading books, there was always stories about a wizard who had an apprentice, and he would give him three tasks to gain the wizard's powers. Paul Aubrey was my wizard. The first off, he sent me to research the Harbour Island story and then lead it together. The second task was to take photographs for the Paradise Island story, and that ended up with Anne and I working together to write it. And the third task was the most difficult task anybody could ever have. He wanted, are you familiar with the poem In Bay Street by Bliss Carman? He was a Canadian poet laureate. He talks about the color of the pink on the old pink wall, the lapis lazuli color of the sea, the gold of the orange tree. And I was supposed to photograph them and capture them. I couldn't capture that at all. But there was one stanza in that poem which talked about magic charm, peace of mind, and felicity of the soul. And I realized that you could only do that poetically. So in the second chapter of my book, I've analyzed that poem. In fact, I've analyzed the whole book. It's actually the first chapter. The preface is the first. I go through a tribute to Paul Aubrey. I've got Sir Geoffrey Johnstone's eulogy, which is the beautifully most well-written eulogy you could read. I've got Sir Etienne de Pooch, and then I analyze the poem. It's a tribute to Paul Aubrey. That's in the chapter. But his enthusiasm, if you look in the inside back page, you'll see that his enthusiasm made Anne study not only history but linguistics. She we went to linguistic conferences, and Lisa and I into history. His enthusiasm. I can tell you a story about Paul Aubrey that you won't, you might not believe. In that, when he died in 1987, Mrs. Aubrey sold the house in Collins Avenue, and we got a lot of the furniture, including the garden furniture, with these two ship's lamps, a red and a green lamp, which used to go either side of a ship. And I didn't know how to fix them on the bar, so I went round to the old house to see how they were fixed. And I worked it out, and then I sat there, and I thought, how desolate the garden looks. And I wrote a little poem about the garden. And as I was sitting, I stood up to go home, and Paul Aubrey's spirit came down and shivered right through my body, changed my whole life. I had to research and write history after that. It was like a compulsion.
You have a number of manuscripts, unprinted, unpublished work of research right now that you plan to publish, right? But this new book that you have now, right? What is it all about? What's the general synopsis of it?
Well, I start the first chapter with Life Begins at 40. And the reason for that is that a few days after I was 40, I was lying on the top of a rock on a mountain in England. I was on a mountain leader's course, and this was the orientation practice. And I was looking up at the stars and the moon and the beautiful sky and the breeze and everything. It was so beautiful. I thought, life does begin at 40. The first year of my degree, and the majors were philosophy and religion. And when I came back, Paul Aubrey sent me researching, as I say. And I just continued on. One of the things that grabbed me was when Anne was studying, she used to present papers at linguistic conferences. And she asked me to research the demography of slaves, black people in the Bahamas, so that she could work out the Creole linguistic system. And that led to me typing out 849 African names and tribes, you know, that I put in my book, From Africa to the Bahamas. And it just stuck with me. But then I kind of researched for other people. I researched for Arthur Haley on Lyford Key. And, you know, William Lyford's story is interesting. William Lyford Sr. was in the Bahamas as a mariner in the 1720s, in Woods Rogers and Fenney's time. Then he came back and he was a privateer in the 1740s War of Jenkins Ear. Now, the strange story about this is there's a guy called Jerry Braddock in North Carolina who was descended from William Lyford and David Cutler Braddock, and they were two privateers in the Bahamas in the 1740s. He got stuck and couldn't get back to his ancestors past them. And then he read in the newspaper that Sean Connery lived at Lyford Key. And he wrote to find out why it was called Lyford Key. And, of course, they give it to Arthur Haley, being resident there and an author and everything, which used to write the Lyford Key newsletters. So Arthur Haley, through Diane Phillips, hired me to research for the Lyford Key story. And the story of William Lyford came out in that his son, William Lyford Jr., was one of the planners of DeVoe's raid on Nassau to release Nassau from the Spanish. And in reward, he was given Lyford Key land and Cat Island, land on Cat Island. And, of course, the Lyford Key land eventually came down through William Wiley and others, and Harold Christie sold, and Lyford Key was developed. So there's a brief history of Lyford Key in that chapter.
Your research is being used or has been used for a number of books.
Correct.
Especially history books inside the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Right? What books can you name that your work has been used for?
Oh, boy.
I know it's a lot. I know it's a lot.
Yeah. I cannot actually name them offhand because I cannot remember offhand, but I'm so surprised that my name, Anne's name, and Paul Albury's name appear in the end notes of many, many books.
Yes, I remember the Duke of Windsor when he was writing a book about that. They referenced your contribution to that. Even the Burma Road riots, some of your research, they reference about that. But so I am eternally grateful for that. But just for a history reference, I know you work closely with your wife, Anne Lawler, closely with your daughter, Lisa, in terms of her new book, which she just published recently. And of course, you re-edited, you've participated with Paul Aubrey in a number of his books. One of the premier books that people herald your name for is The Paradise Island Story, right? And the history of that. And when you think of this book that you have now, do you include Bahamian nuggets in terms of the trend? You say life starts at 40. Your life of living in the Bahamas, does this book include that?
Yeah. You mentioned Sir Orville Turnquest, who I worked for 15 months researching on the Duke of Windsor, and he ended up with his book, What Manner of Man Is This? But in this book, I've outlined my research for him, both in the archives, the Nassau Library on Shirley Street, and even paid for me for a trip to go to do the National Records in England. I've included in this book my research for him. I've also included in this book research I had as president of the Historical Society. And then I've got an amazing story on that. I was only president for about 3 days when I got a call from the BBC in London to ask me about Winslow Homer. They had found this, it was in one program on art, but then it appeared in another one called Fake and Fortune. That one's canceled and they put it in Fake and Fortune. And this Winslow Homer painting was of three children dressed in clothes which weren't English or anything. And the BBC asked me to go and research in the archives because it was in the time of Governor Blake in the 1880s. And I went there and I found that the three children were actually at a party, a New Year's party given by Governor Blake, where the theme was the Arabian Nights. And the three children were his sons and daughters dressed as in the Arabian Nights costumes. And then the BBC man came out, Philip Mould, and he went to look at the Royal Vic, but of course there was only like the doorpost there with a sign on, there's no Royal Vic anymore. I had to send him pictures of the Royal Vic. But then he went to the archives and pretended to find the material I had found and never given me the mention for it. I mean, I got £200 for the research, but I'd like to just have had a mention, you know.
Look how I can't quote from the BBC no more. The dear BBC, you mess it up.
But then you would the most amazing thing is that last year, we got a call from the Metropolitan Museum of New York asking for background information of when Winslow Homer was in the Bahamas. So I had to supply, and Lisa and I talked to them on Zoom. I supplied like pictures of the Bahamas and information about the time that Winslow Homer was here.
Mm-hmm. For many people, New York society is like when you catch Bidem in the park under the light playing dominoes and having a good time. That's what sessions at the Bahamas Historical Society are like often. I've popped in and accessed some excellent lectures, including a lecture by Grace Turner on graves and graveyards, and then Miss Brown, who is my neighbor's mother, deceased now.
Oh, yeah, the stories, Fox Hill.
Yeah, Fox Hill Stories by historian Brown. It's just fantastic. And then one I missed, which was about urban runaway slaves in the Bahamas.
Oh, yeah.
New Providence. I mean, the talks are fascinating and well-constructed and entertaining. Mr. Lawler, which subject matter, which presenter has been the most, for you and then for the audience more generally, the most entertaining subject matter in that space, the Bahamas Historical Society?
I would say that, Jennifer, on female slaves, she talked about female slaves. I think that was one of the most outstanding talks. Jennifer's name, I can't have forgotten her name. But anyway, all right, that was one of the most outstanding. And then there's a guy called Woubre that used to come down every January, and he would talk about the cloisters on Paradise Island. That was an interesting talk. But I mean, being a historian, all of them are interesting. Yeah,
yeah. The one by Miss Brown, I mean, just a storyteller. And yeah. There was a little segment in there about homosexuality, right?
Yeah.
And then she saw me in the, I mean, look here. She had a little joke and she threw it in there, and then the conversation just kept moving. And then she's like, y'all don't mind me and Aaron, that's my girl, right? But they're just entertaining, and they're not like you lecture when you was in high school. They bring history to life, truly.
Okay, this book, The Bahamas History and Memoir by Jim Lawler. What price is it? What is it priced at? And you said it's going to be available for its release this Saturday, October 5th. What's the price now for it?
It's $50.
$50.
I had to charge a little more because of the good images that I had to do for the chapters. Mm-hmm. I had to do the whole book in color, which is more expensive. And then there's more pages, like 250-odd pages to read. So it costs a little bit more.
And you say it's going to be at the Nassau Yacht Club this Saturday, October 5th?
It is.
At what time again?
At 11 a.m., yeah.
Okay. So we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll continue this conversation. Do I need reservations, or I just need to pop up and say I come to listen to Jim Lawler and to get a copy of this book?
Yeah, you just come and...
Just come.
Payment methods. Can I bring cash, credit card, digital payments?
I prefer cash, but Lisa, who's going to probably be this salesperson, can do it online banking.
As well. Okay, awesome.
We're going to take a quick break here. We're talking to Jim Lawler.
Or check.
Or check is always good.
We take check.
Who's going to be honored this month, actually, by the government. We're still celebrating him. And we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back.
The Nassau Guardian has delivered news and views that matter since 1844. Now, the Nassau Guardian app is available at your fingertips. Download it at Google Play or the App Store. Get the best in news and commentary from the most trusted newspaper in the country with the Nassau Guardian app.
Castle Printing Services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. We're continuing our conversation with Mr. Jim Lawler, who is going to be honored by the Bahamas government this month, right? For his contribution to the Bahamas. Right now, he is publishing, actually, debuting his book, The Bahamas History and Memoir by Jim Lawler, O.E.
His newest book.
His newest book, right? Mm-hmm. I need to have a list of all the books that you've been acquainted with or familiar with.
Well, the first two were alongside my wife, which was the Harbor Island story.
The Harbor Island story. Mm-hmm.
Then the Paradise Island story. We updated Paul Albrecht's then. Mm-hmm. Then I did Paul Albrecht, A Man and His Writings, like a bio of Paul Albrecht in the first section and his historical talks. In this, you know, he used to talk to Rotary every October. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He'd give a talk. Where was that?
Yeah, the list of the books.
Oh, the books, yeah. So then I did a picture history of the Bahamas, which museum. It was like a tourist souvenir plus a primer for school children on Bahamians because it was like cartoons. It was Diane Pullinger's paintings on screen of the Bahamian history, nice. Which is featured in a museum. You've seen it, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So that was a picture history. We got a grant from the Lightfoot Key Foundation to do that. So that sells very well. Unfortunately, Perry Christie promised to put it in schools, but it never ever got.
We can still work on it.
We got time.
We have a new government. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Then From Africa to the Bahamas. I have been working on a history of the Methodist Church for about a year, but I'm kind of stuck on the last chapter of that because I can't get the information. There's this book, The Bahamas History and Memoir. And then I've got a new book that's at the media now. It'll be published hopefully by Christmas time, A New History of the Bahamas.
A New History of the Bahamas.
That's yeah, once I finish this book, and I just to say that I had chapter 4 is a brief history of Harbor Island, and chapter 10 is a brief history of the Bahamas. And I thought to myself, you know, I've got enough information to write a new history. So the new history, what I do is I start with the Lucayans and then the Eleuthinian Adventurers and early days. And then I've got a chapter on pirates, a chapter on the black people, slaves, free people and that. Sort of taken from my From Africa book. I do migration, the marine economy, tending the land, all the agricultural and salt. And
I don't hear a chapter on Chikchani, Gorlin, Wahoo, mermaid. I don't hear
Bahamian mythology.
Bahamian mythology.
No, I didn't. That was kind of in my From Africa book.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So I didn't want to repeat myself.
So we can anticipate this book by the end of this year.
I hope so, yes. I've just sent the third proof back yesterday. There's a little bit difficulty with the images in chapter 4, which is the struggle to grow Nassau in the 18th century. Mm-hmm. And it's very with images and tables, it's kind of difficult to put it into the text.
Yeah.
So that's been a bit difficult. But I just sent the third proof back yesterday, and hopefully it'll be good. And then, of course, there's a chapter on the Bahamas before and during World War II. Oh,
nice.
The Burma Road Riot. The murder of Sahari Oaks, and I've got some new information in that.
Mm-hmm. What? I have Sahari Oaks on my list here, Mr. Newry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, conspiracy. Yeah.
And the last chapter, I do politics, tourism, banking, politics. And the last chapter is probably be the most interesting one, is the independence, creating a new national identity.
So it's a complete history, a comprehensive history of the Bahamas.
You find in it a lot of detailed information that is missing out of the general history books.
So that's a book to have, to keep in your library to say, let me go and reference, right?
A New History of the Bahamas.
A New History of the Bahamas, and that's coming out later on this year. But this book, The Bahamas History and Memoir by Jim Lawler, right, has a lot of detailed pictures, colorful pictures, pictures of actually this picture of early Bahamiano on the sea. And also it's analytical. You have poetry inside it also?
Poetry.
Yeah. And then you also have like family trees. When I say family trees, like a history of various families?
No, I don't have a history of families.
Okay. And the reason why I mention that, because I know once upon a time we spoke about, who was it now? Jeffrey Johnstone, I think. And their lineage, right? And who related to pirates and who not related to pirates inside the Bahamas. I'm not sure if you mentioned that in this book. Or
no, and then in the new history book, I've got a list of pirates who were pardoned by, when Woodes Rogers came, and indicated who, which pirates stayed in the Bahamas. Actually, one of the interesting guys is Peter Courant, an ex-pirate. In chapter 2 of this book, I describe him because it's a love story, like a meditative love story. Mm-hmm. And the widow Leah Anderson cohabits with him. And then he has to run away because, you know, it's bad. He's over cohabiting is wrong. You could get whipped or hanged for that. Such an offense
like
that.
Yeah. But definitely it's a Bahamian story, and I appreciate it, right? But we have 1 minute now. I'm going to remind people that this Saturday at the Nassau Yacht Club, October 5th at 11 a.m., Jim Lawler, new book, The Bahamas, History and Memoir, right? Life starts at 40?
Life begins at 40.
Life begins at 40, and you basically do a tapestry of your life and then do some analytical approaches of the Bahamas and history all entwined into that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And of course, and there's a couple of chapters on the highlights from my newsletters.
Okay.
Which you referenced already has been interesting.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's time to go. I'm just saying that you need to come out this Saturday.
I need to add another conspiracy to my list about life begins at 40. Life begins at zero when I get here. 40, I hear.
And for a mere $50. You come with your $50.
Absolutely.
At the Nassau Yacht Club at 11 a.m.
Bring your checkbook, bring your cash, bring your credit card, multiple payment methods.
Bring all your friends.
Bring your friends.
Yes.
Bring your Grammy.
And then have a conversation with Jim Lawler while you're there.
Absolutely.
Good. Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.